You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Being a freshman in college is exciting, meeting new people, figuring out just who you are. But big changes can also trigger or worsen mental health disorders such as anxiety and depression. If untreated, these disorders can prove to be fatal. Suicide is the leading cause of death among college students, and all too often, parents have no idea the student was struggling. Today, we talk about preventing suicide among college students. And we begin with Colleen Edmonds of Oakland County, a board member with the Michigan chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Her daughter, Megan, died by suicide in 2014 after her freshman year of college.
Our daughter was gifted academically. She had many friends. She was state champion lacrosse player. You know, she was a happy kid.
Colleen says Megan was excited to go off to the University of Michigan, and she seemed to be doing well. But when her high school boyfriend broke up with her in the fall, things began to unravel.
We still have her phone, so we have seen every text and every message, and we didn't know that she could not get over that.
Megan was hospitalized overnight in the U of M psychiatric ward in January 2014. In July, while her family was out of town and she was home, Megan died by suicide. This loss has driven Colleen to become an advocate for suicide prevention. I sat down with her to talk about her work and just what schools and parents can do to support students who are struggling. How do you think colleges, let's talk in general because there are parents of college kids all over listening, how could colleges do a better job about being proactive when it comes to mental health on campus and problems that students are facing?
Well, right now, I know at Michigan now, they have more peer support groups, which I think helps the students immensely because really no one wants to go speak with a 55-year-old woman or a man.
Tell mom and dad.
Right, or tell mom and dad. So now, you know, there's Active Minds is on campus, and it's on 400 campuses throughout the country. Wolverine Support Network started pretty much right after Megan passed, and her roommate was very involved in that. I just think that the schools need to train their faculty better to look for signs when people are struggling. I know for a fact that Megan's RA was never notified after Megan's January incident, and she had thought that he would be. She texted me every day and said, "Mom, I'm so embarrassed to walk down the hall in my dorm. I don't know if people know what happened." And then each day I said, "You know, has your RA reached out to you?" And he hadn't. And in fact, he didn't even know about the incident.
Talk to us about this whole part that parents, especially first-time kid going to college, you realize privacy. You don't get to know everything, grades or things going on. How does a college balance the privacy laws with perhaps letting family members know? What do you think? What did you learn
That is my mission. To have some things changed. I'm an advocate for suicide prevention. I went to an advocacy forum, the annual forum in June in D.C., and we went on Capitol Hill to speak with our representatives and speak with senators. And
because do we agree that university and college schools' hands are tied?
They are tied, but I guess you can also, with the HIPAA laws, if your child has to get hospitalized for anything, you can sign and have your child sign that prior to school. And I think I really think it's a wise thing.
To give you access to.
To give you access. Okay. You know, and some children maybe don't want it, and that's fine. But, you know, I think that it really would be something that if I had to do over, I would have done. There was also the Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act that I don't think that a lot of people are aware of. And what that is if you are a dependent and you claim your child on your taxes, then you have a right to know their grades, because that is key when you have an 18-year-old, and actually sometimes they're 17 when they go off to college.
Mine was.
You know, you can't just be thrown into an adulthood at 18. I think a lot of times they lack the resources to make those decisions.
The emotional resources.
The emotional. And I think kids these days are not, you know, back when I was in college in the mid-80s, if you failed, it was more of a disappointment. Now if you fail, It's you are a failure. And I think kids, they're not versed in that. You know, it's okay to fail. And you were not a failure because you got a C or a D on a test. And I think that's really difficult. I think today's kids have so much pressure.
What do you wish you had known about mental health and about suicide and college pressures before your child went to college? What do you think parents right now should know about the reality of mental health and suicide before packing your child off to
college? Well, I think you need to have the discussion with your child that, you know, mental health is as important as your physical health. And, you know, it's okay to ask for help. I mean, it always was a stigma, and we have to break that stigma. It's very easy for kids to feel that if I go for help, someone's going to think, oh, she's crazy or he's crazy. And in reality, that's not the case. And, you know, 1 in 4 college students suffer from anxiety is really the number one issue. You have to have that discussion with your child that it's okay not to feel okay. And everybody has had times where they don't feel okay.
And really, what you're saying, it strikes me, needs to start when they're tiny and try to give them that sense all the way through.
Exactly.
Because as you say, they go off now without that emotional toolkit to weather what they're going to face mm-hmm. when they are in this big new world.
Right. You know, and we had had a couple of suicides in our area prior to, you know, my children going off to college. And I sat down with them and had talks about it. And they said to me both, like, Mom, we could never, ever do something like that. Never would it ever be a possibility. And I know in my daughter's case, it was a snap that night. You know, she had people at our house, and she had been drinking. And I guess I didn't know to the extent that she was self-medicating. And she and I were really, we were so close, you know, like best friends. And, you know, I think she was embarrassed about asking for help. And, you know, the reality is we need to stop this stigma.
What keeps you in this fight?
Because this never should have happened. Our daughter, that night in January, she didn't know, she didn't remember, but there was a police officer who had reached out to her at our house the next day, and he told her she wrote a note. And when she got back to school, she found this note. We never knew about this note.
What was the note?
It was a chicken scratch note that said, Mom, Dad, and Brian, my son, I can't live like this anymore. I will see you in heaven. And we found it in August. Megan passed away in July. So we contacted the school. And I was really, my husband and I were so upset that that note was never brought to the hospital. And again, the school said it's students' property and they could not bring it. And when I met with the hospital months and months and months later, and I met with the head of the psych ER, and I told her about the note, her face went ashen white. And I said, you didn't know about a note, right? And she said, no. And I said, well, will that have made a difference? And she said, yes. And so it took me about 5 months to get the school to let, if there is a note, to bring that to the hospital.
Colleen, what do you do as a family to remember and to celebrate Megan's life?
Oh, we remember her every day. We celebrate on July 11th. The first year, we had all of her friends, and we had a huge barbecue in our backyard with over 100 people coming in, you know, mid-July to celebrate her. You know, holidays, she's always remembered. And, you know, every day, we have pictures of her around the house. I talk to her every single day.
Colleen Edmonds is a board member with the Michigan chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Colleen.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me share the story.
The The Michigan chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention will hold meetings all around Michigan this coming Saturday for survivors of suicide. You can get information and the locations by going to afsp.org. A key part of preventing suicide among college students is getting them the mental health care they need. And that's what Michigan State University psychiatrist Dr. Farah Abbasi does every single day. I talked to Dr. Abbasi about what's driving the high rates of mental health issues on campus and when it's time for students and families to reach out for help. You have said very consistently that students today face greater levels of stress and mental health issues than any other generation.
Yes, I think, Cindy, we don't realize that this generation that's growing up has seen many changes economically. We have seen meltdowns. We have seen many wars. Beside that, unemployment versus level of education needed to get into the system. So on one hand, we are setting them up that until unless you have this education, you can't get anywhere in life. But on the other hand, the job market is shrinking and the college student loans are getting higher.
And we see the results of this stress. According to the American College Health Association, the suicide rate among young adults aged 15 to 24 has tripled since the 1950s, and suicide is now the second most common cause of death among college students. You've got to realize statistics like these are terrifying.
It's scary. It is a silent epidemic, and I don't know what will it take for us to wake up to it.
When you think of the reasons for this, college age, high school age, you mentioned the expense of the degrees and the pressure to get degrees. What are some of the other reasons that this stress is being so fueled?
So let's take it back from school level. What is happening is this is the first time the kids are expanding their world. So this is the first time they are getting exposed to peers. They are getting exposed to what is right, what is wrong. They're trying to identify role models. This can be a really hard time because on the other hand, we have this horrible things happening like bullying and also the services, the resources are shrinking. So if you look at an average school might have a school counselor, but what are they basically helping the kid with is more like academic stuff, you know, what classes to choose, how you are doing in classes. But we look at this way that an average kid is spending more time at school, being exposed to all these forces. I don't think even our school systems are set up to meet the needs of a growing kid. They don't have the guidance that's needed. And that's the time when they cultivate their core values, who they are going to be as a person. And this is the time, if we nurture it and provide the support, that they can then develop that sense of worth and self and have that resiliency then to cope with when they come to college.
When you think of the kinds of things that are all over in the headlines, sexual assault, substance abuse, concerns about gun violence in schools and on campuses, eating disorders. And then it's just lifestyle habits, too. You often talk about sleep deprivation, which is a problem not just for college-age students, but we hear it for high schoolers as well.
Most important thing that the kid requires at this time is having a structure at home and having those communication channels open. So you have to understand as a parent, you are not their adversary. You are not there to control them, but to be their ally, be their advocate, help them navigate this new stress. But also, the conversation also is changing from books to bullets, right? So now as a parent, as a kid, you have to worry about your safety. What if you have an active shooter? It's a reality that every school now has to talk about and have resources for. So imagine a small kid going to school to worry about all the dangers now surrounding them.
These seeds are being planted at a young age, and then as we pile things on as they get older, they really come home to roost. Now, for parents, especially parents of youngsters who are not living at home, they're on a campus. How can we parents tell when things are going badly before we're in an all-out crisis?
So I think we talked about any sudden changes of behavior. When a kid gets to college, they suddenly are caught between being this new adult and still a child in some ways. They are seeking fun. They think, oh, wow, there is no parents. We have access to resources. Let's party, right? But again, the thing that you have to look out for is sudden changes of behavior. So the thing is someone using excessive, maybe alcohol. Other thing is, are they missing school? How are they keeping up with finances? Who are they hanging out with? What is their peer support, peer group like? But important ingredient again comes is what kind of relationship you have developed with them. Because now you have to start treating them as an adult, and they should be responsible for their behavior, and you are just empowering and validating that.
When is it time, Dr. Abbasi, to seek professional mental health care for your student?
So there is two things we look at. One is severity and other is functionality. So severity will come out if they are trying to hurt themselves or getting angry, irritable, aggressive, violent towards others. The first criteria is safety, safety, and safety. Second thing is something small as, are they buying guns? Are they getting more interested in, let's say, substance abuse? So these are the behaviors to look for. Other thing becomes functionality. Are they keeping up with their friends? Are they keeping up with their educational demands? How are they doing with their relationships, with the family, with loved ones? Any changes in that is a red flag.
So when a parent and a youngster together decide, all right, I need help, call and get me an appointment, what are the resources there in our state? Do we have enough mental health professionals to help the kids and the teens and the young people?
Unfortunately, that is the biggest crisis we are dealing with right now. The ratio provider to patient ratio is, like I was just looking up numbers, we are hardly meeting 28% needs of our patients. And at the same time, you are seeing that states and federal budgets are cutting resources. You don't have enough patient beds. Like, let's see, a child who needs urgent care. We have to go up to Ann Arbor or maybe go further to find that bed. That is definitely an issue that we all have to seriously look into and invest in.
Michigan State University psychiatrist, Dr. Farah Abbasi. Dr. Abbasi, thank you so much.
Thanks, Cindy.